What we're going to look at is, I guess most of you are DBAs. Is that a fair statement? Okay. What we're going to look at is, how is the DBA landscape looking like in the future? And what are some of the things that I think as a DBA you need to start paying attention to? Okay. Because times are changing and times have changed, right? Is there anyone that used SQL Server before 6.5? Okay. So that's the 4.2. Okay, 4.2. If you look at that, I mean, we went through a lot of changes from a feature perspective, a tools perspective, and so on. And so we had that change for the longest time, right? So I would say that times are changing. Okay, and we have to go through that change and really understand what's happening there. When I started with databases, I was probably 20 kilos lighter than what I am right now. So, yeah, that's a change, and my wife kind of adjusted to that, like somewhere in the middle between 10 and 20 kilos more. Do you guys want more light in here, or is it fine for you guys? Okay. So times are changing, okay? This was a typical farmer, I guess, a while ago, and the analogy. We all manage server farms, right? And what does that success look like? Of course, they had more advanced features, and then they went through that same process. But if you want to be successful in the future, you really need to start thinking about those future opportunities. Okay? The farmer of today is not longer the farmer what he was 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And the same thing for the DBA. If you manage a pool of servers, you have to go through that change as well. This is the modern farming. It's kind of sit back and relax and wait. Didn't we have that in one of our product launches? Sit back and relax and wait while things are being installed? Okay, that's kind of how it is with a lot of the technologies that we work with nowadays. And so what we hear from people is like, ooh, well, I don't know what's going to happen with all that cloud stuff and moving things from my on-premises to the cloud, and now I have less control because I'm going to be using things like SQL database and so on. What is that going to do for me as a DBA? Okay, my advice there, use it as a strength, but get on that cart now. Start thinking about how you could start leveraging some of those capabilities. And if I were to ask you, how many of you actually have logged on to the Windows Azure portal? Okay, I see very little hands going up. Okay, I mean, some of them are really big hands, but there's very few hands going up, right? To me, that's a concern. In my head, I had to make that switch too. Like, hey, what am I going to do, and what are the capabilities I can really start thinking about to build upon those strengths? Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at those capabilities. We're going to look at those advances that we had with some of our tools that are going to make your life in many ways much, much easier. And we're going to talk about some of the enhancements we did in SQL Server 2012, what's coming in SQL Server 2014, but also what has changed from a tools perspective or some of the tools that you're currently using, okay? And it's all about efficiency with new technology, new feature sets, and doing things much more optimized, okay? You see that in any kind of industry coming. So first thing what we're gonna do is we're gonna paint a landscape on the Windows Azure platform. And I know some of you have been to Windows Azure sessions before, and I guess some of you were in Scott Klein's session on CloudOS and Shashank's session on CloudOS databases. Okay, there might be some overlap there. Okay, I want you to be aware of that. So don't keep that in mind as you do the eval that, hey, I told you there's going to be some overlap in this. Okay, so look at things. We see a lot of things upcoming into the non-relational space. Okay, we see things like blob storage, tables, data that not necessarily and typically sits within SQL Server or with any of your relational databases that you're used to. But as a DBA, you're going to have to be aware about those because they might be affecting the way you deal with your databases, the way you deal with connections you need to set, connections you need to make, okay? The big data, HD Insight, Hadoop distributions. We actually have technologies that are going to make your life easier If you look on some of the technologies we implemented with SQL Server Parallel Data Warehouse V2, we have a feature that we call Polybase, and Polybase actually allows you to query a database that is SQL in the same join syntax and statement and get data from a Hadoop file system. Okay, so we'd actually provide that connectivity and that capability. So, and as a DBA, you need to be aware of that, right? Well, oh, someone is asking me to optimize my database. What's going on? You look at that join, and it's no longer traditionally querying it with a linked server or a local definition, and actually using a totally different file system, a totally different query mechanism behind the scene to get that data back. Okay? And then, of course, if you look on the typical relational engines, we see things like SQL Server running in a virtual machine, and whether you run that on, in my opinion, whether you run that on Hyper-V or you run that on-premises using any other of the virtualization technologies, or you're going to be running that into the Windows Azure environment, there's going to be things you need to be aware of in terms of configuration, management, optimization, look at your storage, and so on as part of that as well. Okay. What else we did is we introduced a SQL database which runs as a service on Windows Azure. And what we'll see happening is that those databases, we have a lot of flexibility and choice on how we spin them up. But there's a lot of different ways on how we manage this, okay? You don't have that same granularity that you do have with running it on a physical server where you're gonna be responsible for patching or where you're going to be responsible for defragmenting the database and optimizations real specific. Okay, but we're going to look on that on the tools perspective. If you look on the Windows Azure platform, we'll see that we have that fabric of compute power. We could have virtual machines there. We could have cloud services. And then we could store our data in many ways. The only thing we're going to be looking at from that perspective in this session is how does that work inside a virtual machine and how can I provision and those kind of things. And then we're going to look into SQL database on how am I going to manage this. But I will also point out some of the capabilities that we have running on Windows Azure by spinning up an HD Insight cluster, those kind of things as well. And then how you start leveraging, for example, blob storage or Azure storage for backup purposes or database initialization and so on. Okay? And we'll also have a little pitch on the virtual networking there. If I look at my private cloud, I think most of you have painted that story already. If I look at it from a public perspective, we have two offerings. We have SQL Server and Windows Azure Virtual Machines, or we have Windows Azure SQL Database. In the past, we called that SQL Azure Database. The key difference is the granularity of control you have, the granularity of memory you can assign, the scalability options you have on each of those. Because the SQL database is a fully managed service, which means you're not going to be patching and installing SQL Server updates. Okay, it's much more simplified administration, but you're really eliminating a set of hardware costs. Some of the concerns that we see there is, well, okay, what happens when I spin up a SQL database and what happens? Well, we actually have multiple offerings. We have what we call a web and a business edition. But actually, recently, we also announced a premium edition that's going to give you resource reservation to have a much faster, more predictable performance on each of those. Okay? And when it comes to management, we'll have a drill down. Now, if you look at some of the key scenarios, okay, of course, you can look at the bottom tier and says, hey, we can use both. We can combine that. We can have databases that run into a virtual machine that have linked server definitions to SQL database. Okay? That is a great, perfectly usable scenario. If you look at the key implementations on implementing inside a virtual machine, we see that the tier 2 and the tier 3 applications actually run on virtual machines in a lot of businesses and a lot of environments. How many of you have an MSDN subscription? If you look at the MSDN benefits, what we announced at TechEd North America is we talked about the benefit you get with MSDN in terms of budget that we allocate to you so you actually could start playing with that. When someone comes to you and says, like, hey, we're spinning up a new project, I need to have 5 SQL servers for that project in a dev and test environment. Okay. What's the first thing you're going to be looking for? Resources, right? And if you have that server sitting there and you have those resources, well, you're going to look on, hey, what's going to be the operating system I'm going to put on there? What are the requirements? What am I going to do with disk layout and so on? Okay. What if you don't have that server? You're going to have to order that server hardware and capacity. Okay. Realistically, they just don't ship overnight from any online web shop, right? You probably want to have some dedicated resources ordered, and it might take you some time to actually get that provisions, get that ordered, get that racked up and installed and so on. Okay? If I were to spin this up, my test and dev into a Windows Azure platform, I'm basically up and running within the next 10 minutes. Okay? And I can assign resources and memory and capacity to it. Now, in a session that I did on SQL Server 2014, we talked about some of the scenarios as well on what I can do in the cloud when we talk about the high availability and disaster recovery scenario. Okay? And so what happens is, with SQL Server 2014, I actually have the option to create an always-on availability group that I can use in a really hybrid IT scenario. So what I can do there is I can say, hey, I have my primary database on premises, and I have a secondary replica sitting on premises too, but I could have a third one that I use asynchronous, and that third one is going to be running into a Windows Azure virtual machine. Okay? Not only will that give you a great option from a high availability and disaster recovery perspective, it also might be the right solution for you to offload a reporting capacity that you want to bring within your organization to people that are traditionally connected over the internet and then connect to CorpNet and connect to the CorpNet reporting services. I might just spin that up as a service on Windows Azure. I could run reporting services and then point those reporting services to that readable secondary database that I have now running inside the Windows Azure virtual machine. Okay? And will it stay in sync? Of course it will stay in sync because I'm using always-on availability groups to keep them in sync, and I have the advantage of being able to recover from that as well. Okay? So that's a great scenario. Another thing you could do is you can actually run everything inside Windows Azure and spin up a domain controller and create synchronous always-on availability groups across of them. We had a question in the back there that I'm going to take. Yeah, so the question is, what if I spin up a report in reporting services, and let's say we build a report, okay? You're going to use Report Designer, or you're going to use Business Intelligence Development Studio or SQL Server Data Tools, and you build the report and you're going to publish that report. If you spin up the Windows Azure reporting services, your deployment is, rather than deploying that to your report server on premises, you're going to report that, deploy that to the reporting services in the cloud. Your data source could be sitting on premises if you provide access to it, and we could do data management gateways on top of that as, if needed, or create a virtual network that will make that server look like it actually is part of your network. Can I point that to a Windows Azure SQL database? Yes, I can do that. Okay, you can point that to a database that at that point is running into a virtual machine running on Windows Azure as well. Okay, so I think that was your question.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So looking at the virtual machine, okay, lower cost of ownership. You don't need to have any changes on your application. One of the things that really you could use to your strength there is you can build a library of virtual machines, upload them, and use them as a template. Okay. I spin up a virtual machine and I install SQL Server and I install an application on it and I put some sample files and whatever I need to have in there. Okay. Next week someone says, hey, I need another dev and test. Are you really going to install SQL Server again, and are you really going to install the applications and everything? No. You want to use that template and spin that up directly from that template. Okay. What else is, you actually see that library that we have sitting on Windows Azure, is you have many offerings. You could choose from the operating system, you could bring your own license. This is actually the mechanism that we use to get people onto SQL Server's 14 evaluation copy. You could just spin it up and they have it up in 10 minutes, okay? And I'm actually gonna show you that on how that works. The key thing is if I run SQL Server in a Windows Azure virtual machine, nothing is any different than what you're already used to, okay? Well, primarily, right, because you focus pure on your DBA job, you can do your security, you can enable transparent data encryption, you can do your same level of auditing and so on. You have full control on when you patch that operating system, on when you patch SQL, which knowledge base you install, and you have the full capability of the entire stack, including business intelligence. Now, one might argue and say like, oh, can I run analysis services inside a Windows Azure virtual machine with the capacity that I have? Well, sure, it depends, but you have the restrictions in terms of memory you can allocate to that virtual machine, okay? Can I scale out that virtual machine and assign two CPU cores, add more memory and everything afterwards to it? Absolutely, yes, that is perfectly possible. Okay. You can scale a VM, add more cores to it, and add more memory to it as well. Okay? So it's fully flexible, and you have the control. You can actually integrate that within your Active Directory by making that virtual machine that sits in that Windows Azure environment and make that part of your hardware. Okay? So what we offer is a single pane of glass to manage it. If you use System Center, you actually have full integration with System Center. Okay? What we actually do is, on those virtual machines, we guarantee you a service level agreement of 99.95%, okay? Because when you spin up a virtual machine on Windows Azure, we actually write multiple copies of that VHD. And we write three copies in case we have a disk fail, we fail over, okay? And it's totally semi-transparent of anything that you're doing. And we actually write multiple copies for you. What else I can do is on my storage, if I want to go to another level, is I can actually enable GeoDR, enable geo-replication of that as well. Okay? So you have some really cool functionality right there. Actually, this is a step ladder that for a lot of companies, startups is a perfect solution, right? Because how much money are they going to have to invest if they want that functionality running across data centers with the same level of service level agreement and high availability, right? So you have some huge savings there. Now, if you look at the virtual machine details on what's available now, and I'm actually gonna go through the portal in a second, I have what we call virtual machine sizes. And it really reminds me of a car manufacturer when I look at this, because the price-cost model is probably associated with that as well, right? I have different sizes, and one of the things that we have is we have the A7 size, which is 8 CPU cores and 56 gigs of RAM, okay? I think that would serve how many percent of the workloads? When we look at storage, okay, I can attach virtual disks to that, and so I can use Azure Storage, attach that to a single virtual machine, and you see my capacity. I can do 16 virtual machines, and the maximum size capacity you have on those VHD is 1 terabyte. Okay? 16 terabytes running on Windows Azure. Fast and easy to provision, okay? Now, what else I can do is I can bind that together, as I mentioned, with my network, so I have the scalability to really bring that into my network. So let's have a look on how that works, and we're gonna connect to the portal and actually play around with that, okay? There we go, okay? So this is my Windows Azure portal. I logged in, I have a lot of things on there, okay? I have way too many things on there because What I actually have on my Windows Azure profile is multiple subscriptions that I get access to. You can segment that, you can filter that, okay? So if I look on all of the items that I have in there, I can see my storage accounts, I can see the virtual machines, I can look at the SQL databases and so on. So what I'm actually able to do here is I can look at the virtual machines that I have, I can see what is currently running, and what is stopped or deallocated. So I have a couple of things that actually are up and running there, actually into multiple regions as well. So I can see, hey, I have some of them running in the East US, Southeast Asia, West US, Northern Europe. Okay? And I can actually define a location in which I define that virtual network and link those together. Okay? Now, if I want a new virtual machine, what I can do is I can go to new and do a quick create. Or I could say, let's pick one from gallery. Okay? If you pick that from gallery option, you have a couple of options there. You could go to any of the platform images, but you can also say, hey, I want to see my disks, or I want to see my images that I uploaded. I don't think we uploaded any of our images, at least I didn't. Or I did clean it up, so I did not upload any of mine. But if I look on the platform images, okay, I see the Windows Server operating system, I see something like a SharePoint server trial, I see SQL 2012, 2014, it's all there and I could start spinning that up. Okay. Recently, one of our Microsoft valued professionals wrote a blog and went like, oh, I wanted to try this SharePoint server trial and I couldn't get it to work. So I was reading her blog and go like, wait, that doesn't make sense to me. I mean, think about the core concepts. What do you need when you want to run SharePoint? You need a domain controller, right? You need SQL Server, right? And then you could start installing SharePoint, okay? If you would have followed the startup guide, you would have known that first thing you're gonna do is you're gonna spin up Windows Server, you're gonna promote that to be a domain controller, you're then gonna take another one, install SQL, then you're gonna take the SharePoint one that has the SharePoint bits in it, you're gonna run the install, and then you could save where your database resides. And I can really tie those nicely together, okay? And it will work together nicely, okay? So what I'm gonna do here is I'm just gonna take, let's say, I want to do a SQL Server 2014 CTP1 evaluation on Windows Server 2012 R2. We're gonna click next. I'm gonna give that a name. Call that Austeget right there. Specify the size. For this example, let's take the small one. Give that a username. Now, this is where we probably go in and go like, hey, let's do administrator, right? That's not allowed, so let's do cloud admin. Okay, let's then see if I can do the Microsoft default, which is pass at word one. Okay, that's too common, that's not allowed either, okay? So that's what I typically struggle and say like, oh, I'm gonna forget my password by the end of my demo, okay? So let's do this. I'm gonna, can I still see what it is after it's validated? No, I can't, okay. Okay, it's at cloud DBA. Okay, you guys all have this in case I forget, right? So let's hit next here, okay? What else I'm gonna do is I'm gonna create a cloud service on which I'm gonna assign IP routing, and I could pick my subscription, okay? If I take Windows Azure MSDN, that rolls into my free MSDN access and the amount of virtual machines that I could spin up. If I pick up DPE, Scott Klein will pay for it. Let's do this. I could specify which region I want to put this. So based on where I run my demos from, or which event I present, that's what I'm going to show and spin up my demo in this case. Okay? You know what I do? Wait a minute, what's the time in Europe? Okay, so it's 3:41 in Seattle. It's somewhere past midnight in Europe. I'm going to put this one in Europe. Because I know for this example, there's probably other people doing Azure sessions, spitting it up and going to that Azure data center that is closest to where they're presenting. So what I do when I run a demo is typically put it elsewhere. Okay. What I can do is I could specify an availability set, which is a group in which I can make create a kind of a virtual network and put everything inside that virtual network. Okay? So I hit next. Now, what am I going to do next? I want to specify my IP port connectivity, right? So what we're going to do is we're going to be using SQL, so we need to put in some port numbers, right? Okay, what I'm going to do there is, well, we can look at the ports, and I have some defaults in there. Okay, let's call this SQL. Okay, I'm going to use a TCP protocol. I'm going to give that a public port number, let's say 50,000, and a private port number is what? 1433. Okay. Okay. Now, of course, what I can do as well is I can also, if I want to use a dedicated admin connection, I'm going to add port 1434 to that as well. Okay. So I can just take this, hop, hit next. And what I will see is that right now, I am starting to provision a virtual machine. I have a DNS name, and that's going to spin up and it's going to start running my virtual machine. Okay, fairly simple. Now, once that I have one up and running, I can actually look at that. I can look at the dashboard for it and see what my status is. Now, the great thing about this, if I would be running System Center, I could use an Azure Pack and System Center to fully get the same look and feel and run that from my local environment. I don't need to go out to the web portal to actually do that. Okay? there's some items there that are kind of nice that are in preview. What I can do, for example, is I have a capacity capability that's currently in preview that is called Auto Scale Status. That's a great feature. Okay? If I make that part of an availability set, what I can actually do is I can scale out the virtual machine. Okay. Automatically. How many DBAs have to do that into their own virtual environment and have to do this manually? Quite some of you, right? What else I can do is I can look at the endpoints. I can look at my configuration. Okay, I can see that, hey, I have a virtual machine size. And if I want to, I can actually change that size, okay, and also resize if I have to. Well, you guys wanted to test in dev. I wasn't really sure whether you needed that amount of CPU cores and so on. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to scale you back and see how your application performs there. Okay. So let's save this. Okay. Yeah, of course, the virtual machine could be restarted. Let's hit OK and yes. And I can see status here, so I can see what are the operations that are currently running. So I can see I'm creating a virtual machine, and I'm configuring another virtual machine as part of my status. What I can do here is I can get rid of the status. It will still be there. I can go into the details and see what my status is. Now, of course, I'm just clicking around here and adding things to it, right? I can do this all from PowerShell as well. Okay, so just connect to my Azure subscription and start spinning things up and scripting them out as well. Okay, so once that I'm ready with this, what I can do is, this is not one of mine, and this is running and updating. Okay, once that I'm done with this, I can just connect to that, and it will give me an RDP connection. And at that point, you just connect to it using RDP. Or what else you can do, you can go to SQL Management Studio and register that like it were to be a normal server using your SQL Server Management tools and play with that. Okay? All clear on that? Perfect. Now, I'm a DBA and I did hear about some of these other capabilities and features, and I hear about that HD Insight and Hadoop and all that stuff. From within the same portal, of course, I can look at my storage. Okay, and I see storage options that I have there. Let's create a storage on which I actually want to put backups. I heard about the SQL 2014 session. I talked about being able to backup to the cloud. I actually want to start leveraging that and using that. Okay, so what I'm going to do is add some storage to this. Okay, let's add a storage account. Quick create, give that a name. Put that into a certain region. Let's put that in Europe as well. And let's call that Dandy Store. Okay. Somebody is already using that? Really? Who would expect that? I mean, there you go. Oh, Dandy Store exists, but Dandy doesn't. Okay. As you can see here, I have the option here to specify that I want to enable geo-replication on my storage. Okay, so I have that sitting right there. Okay. I don't care about that at this point. And I'm going to use my MSDN on that. I hope I'm not running into the amount of storage accounts that I can create there. But let's hit create. Okay, the storage account will be created and will then show up here into my storage account setting. Okay. Now, once that I have a storage account, in order to connect to one of those storage accounts, what I have to do is I have to look at my access key. Okay. So for each of those storage accounts, you do have an access key. And that means that if I want to use that storage within SQL Server 2012, 2014, in order to connect to that storage, I need that access key. Okay. One of the things we're doing in SQL Server 2014 is actually quite interesting. You can create storage on Azure and run your database services locally, okay? Which means you can run your log file on premises, but your data file is going to be running on Azure, okay? That's a feature that we're gonna be previewing in the next SQL Server 2014 preview as it will come out, okay? But yeah, that's a scenario that actually does make sense. I want to be able to take control over my start and stop services. I want to have my log file locally. I'm going to be leveraging some of the in-memory capabilities and so on. But I can leverage storage. I can actually put file groups on Azure if I wanted to. Okay. So I can then copy this access key and actually do some really cool things like what I showed before. I think in a session on earlier, I showed that onto the SQL 2014 database. If you have SQL 2012, the latest update, oops, I get an error message there, okay? The latest update will allow you to create a credential. That's standard SQL 2012 functionality. But what I'm actually bringing in there is the backup database, okay, to URL. And then I can specify the stats so I can see the process. What I get here is I get an error, okay? The remote name could not be resolved. Why? Because it looks like I either don't have this remote name available or someone might have deleted it, which happens in a shared account. But let's have a look at that. Or my internet connectivity at that point failed, right? So let's see if we can try this again. Let's see if that actually is up and running, or I could go to my Azure portal and actually look and see whether I still have that storage. Okay, and I don't have that storage, so it looks like somebody deleted it. So what is my next step? Okay, take storage that I have sitting here. So I have this Dandy WSQL 2014, okay? I would have to manage my access key, copy over that access key, okay? Take it there, create a new credential, reference the storage name that's going to be Dandy SQL 2014, or was it W 2014? Okay, and then copy paste my storage key, okay? Put that in. Don't forget this one here. So I create another credential. I am then going to that Dandy WSQL storage. So I'm going to copy paste this one here. You're going to love that. Just put that in there. Okay. Now, there's one more thing that I need to do, okay? I see a path here, and that path is called a container. So what I have to do inside that storage container, in that storage object first, I first will have to go and define a container, okay? And that is something that I could easily do. I took the wrong storage there. So what I can go is I can go into this one, I can go to containers, and I can actually add a container to it that I call backup, okay? And since I copy-pasted the wrong storage key, if I now were to take the backup, the error I'm going to get is your container will fail, okay? But this is, this is how you are actually going to refer to that. I have my URL, I grab my storage key, and I can do the backup to URL. You can do the restore to URL. And then some of the other features that are coming in SQL 2014 is a feature that is called Smart Backup. So you can make that actually part of a backup job. To do smart backups based on policy-based management on your database, okay? So there's some quite interesting features that you really should consider and think about leveraging. How many of you do something like this? You right-click on a database, you go to the script database as, or you go to tasks, and you want to generate your database scripts. How many of you do that? Okay, how many of you use a third-party tool for that? And then how many of you are going to compare what runs in my test environment compared to what runs in my production environment to see if someone made any changes? So what we've done with SQL 2012 is first of all, we confused people when we renamed the Business Intelligence Development Studio to SQL Server Data Tools. Because at the same time, we had a project that kicked out of our Visual Studio Engineering that was called DataDude. And DataDude is going to give you, as a DBA, a lot of functionality and features that you should really start playing with. Okay? What I can do is I can actually download SQL Server Data Tools, and there's two options, two flavors actually. You can have that into the Visual Studio 2010 shell, or you can have that into the Visual Studio 2012 shell. And what you do with it is you can create what we call database projects. Let me show you. Going to this one. Do you see how organized my desktop is there? Okay. I'm going to this one, and I'm going to SQL Server Data Tools. So I don't have Visual Studio installed. If I would have Visual Studio installed, same thing with like Business Intelligence Development Studio, it would integrate with it, okay? So I'm going to SQL Server Data Tools, okay? And what I'm going to do is I am going to look around here. And I see something that is called SQL Server Object Explorer. Oh, that's kind of nice. I can connect to a database, okay? And I can see all my databases that I registered. I have a LocalDB project. I have I Like SQL, SQL 2012. And I also have 2014 there, okay? So what I can do with this is I can go through this. I can look at my databases. I've got a couple of databases here. I can look at the tables. I can actually do something like that. Script as create to. Okay. But what I can do is I can just grab an existing database, right click on it, say create a new project. I'll name that project. Okay. Create a directory for the solution, hit start. And what that's going to do is it's going to look at that database schema and grab and capture everything that is sitting in that database schema. Okay? The cool thing about this is I have this in a project now, and I can integrate that with TFS and do version control and so on. If I look at that, I see a couple of things here. I've got a security, I've got a user account, create user. I've got a role membership, I've got tables, okay? And each of those is actually named nicely. It creates a .sql file for each of those, Okay? Now the nice thing about this, I can start making changes to this. Okay? Let's make some changes here. Title and varchar 8, really? Let's make that an varchar 80. Okay, I can save that. And what I can do then is I can now publish this and deploy that back to my database. So I can work on this project in an offline mode and then deploy that back to my database. Now what else I can do is I can do this. I can grab this one here, okay, and I can add some things to it. Okay, what do you want to add? Data. Okay. I want to add tables and views. So if I want to add like a column stored index, or I want to add an instead of trigger, or I want to go into my programmability or security, whatever, I can literally do anything. Okay. Now, I don't know much about SQL Server, and I don't know about you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a table. Okay. Ah, that's a create table. Okay, I got this ID. Let's do column name 1. Okay, pick my data type. Okay, and varchar max. What you'll see there is I have my editor and I have the syntax right away and I can start editing my syntax and so on. Okay, so I'm going to save this one. Okay, as table 1. I can then rename it whatsoever. What else I'm going to do is I'm going to add a view. Let's add a view, and that view is going to be view1 as select star from dim date. Okay, there we go, just a simple view. Okay, because I was told select star, that will get you anything in the table, that's kind of nice, right? So we'll have this here. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to take this project, look at the project properties. Okay. What I can specify there is what is going to be my targeted platform. If I look at the target platform there, okay, I can see I have SQL 2005, 2008, 2012, Windows Azure SQL Database. Okay. I can grab this and specify where I want to deploy this to. Now, I have a database project and I'm going to be using, or I imported a database from 2005 and I want to deploy that to 2012. And then I come to the realization that probably somewhere within my project I used column names that are now reserved keywords. Or I used functions or daytime data types that might not be existing in one version or the other. I can quickly modify that using the data tools here. Okay. Now, what I'll do here is I can say SQL Server 2012, and I'm probably not the smartest database developer by writing a select star statement. Okay. So what I can do is I can do something like code analysis. Okay. Thanks for the coffee, Rob. That's a brilliant idea, and I keep doing that. So, what I'm going to do here is I am going to look at my performance rules for naming. Okay. There's a code analysis that I can do on that data and say, hey, you should avoid select start and store procedure views and table valued functions. Consider using scope identity instead of at identity. Some of the other things is don't start sort procedure with SP underscore. Avoid using patterns that start with percentage and a like predicate. Okay, so you have some code analysis that you can do right on this. Okay, this is a warning. I want to enable this. Enable code analysis on build. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to build my project. Okay, it has an end result reference to a login. Okay, so that login, the user is created, but the login doesn't seem to exist. I'm going to delete this one. I get an error there. So what I'm going to do now is build my solution, another error that I get. Okay, so let's get rid of that role membership here that I don't need. So if I build my solution now with the code analysis, okay, I am going to get my build completed. I'm going to get some output, okay? And my output is going to show me some of the references. It's going to show me some of those capabilities and so on, but my build succeeded. Okay? Now, what am I going to do next? So I can actually build that and publish that database. Okay? Or did it fail? My build failed. Okay? So let's look at my error list, unexpected. There seems to be an error in my configuration file. So let's skip that for this point. If I look at my warnings, okay, I can see my full warning list there as well. Now the cool thing about this is one of the things that I can do with this project is I can actually go into some of the other features here. And I can right click on a project and say, I want to do a schema comparison. Okay, so you really can compare database schemas from what do I have within my project to what do I have in my database, and then decide whether you want to implement the changes or not. Okay? Now, even better, what I can do is I can take this database, okay? I can go to the properties, and I can say that I want to deploy this to a SQL database. So if I deploy this to SQL database, I'm going to change my project right here. Now, the cool thing about this is I can actually first, before I make my changes, I can actually snapshot my project there. Okay? When you create a project snapshot, you create multiple versions of what you were saving, and you could compare those against each other as well. Okay? Now, from a deployment perspective, what that basically does, it creates what we call a data tier application. And I can then either decide whether I want to manually import that into my database here by right-clicking and say, I want to deploy a data tier application, okay? And that will actually allow you to get that data in. Now, I'm going to switch over to SQL database and the capabilities that we have for that one. I guess this is on input 6. So if I look at the Windows Azure SQL database, okay, similar SQL technology, and I have full integration with SQL Management Studio, okay, which means that I can go to SQL Management Studio, register a SQL database that I did create. Okay. What I showed you with the SQL Server Data Tools is I can build my project, build that out, target that, and then deploy that today to any platform. So I don't need to have multiple versions, I could just do multiple snapshots that I can then create and deploy my project to any of the others if I want to. Now, if you think about scale capabilities, there actually is a feature in a SQL database that we don't have natively sitting in SQL Server, and that's the capability to use what we call federations and really create a multi-tenant database where you combine multiple SQL databases into what we call a federated environment, and then your application will take advantage of that, and you can really split out your database across multiple databases running on Windows Azure. Okay. The nice thing about this is the scale-out capability, and one of our reference customers there is a smaller company compared to the big giants that sell tickets for concerts. And so what they do is, let's say there's a movie premiere with Russell Crowe coming out. I know everyone in the room here is a big fan of Russell Crowe. So, and they're going to do a premiere and they're going to sell tickets, okay? Well, Russell Crowe, let's be honest, might not be that popular. So their ticket sales, they don't need to scale that out to 150,000 tickets selling into 10 seconds, right? So what they're going to do for some of their projects is they're going to keep that SQL database into a much smaller environment. They don't need to scale it out. So what happens is when they really build out an environment where they now have a more bigger, more popular artist And in the US, we one of the most popular artists now is, what's her name? Miley Cyrus. I bet that for some events, you might be selling big tickets so they can easily scale that out and scale back when they need that. Now, how does that apply to your business, right? If you're in an, let's say you're managing everyone's tax forms, or you're going to be doing elections, and you're going to be calculating the election results and so on, and the voting is going fully automatic rather than paper-based. Getting all that data together, being able to have that flexible scale is a great opportunity. A lot of companies sell around the holidays, right? They do, there's Christmas specials, there's back-to-school campaigns and so on, where you really see a huge peak. That's the flexibility you have using SQL database, using the scale-out capabilities as we have it there. Now, same thing, when you create a SQL database, we actually built in automatic high availability, okay? Because when you create that SQL database, we actually leverage the technologies we have sitting on that platform. It's the Windows Server Hyper-V-based, and it's also SQL-based. So what we actually do there is we write multiple copies of your database. So we can actually fail over from one database to the other as well. Okay? And that is seamless. That is something that happens at the same time. Now, one of the other things that we actually announced at our partner conference is a new premium offering that we have with SQL Database, which will allow you to do resource reservation and capacity reservation. And you could really, it's like basically if you need more capacity or need more performance, you just drag the slider and you could start leveraging that capacity. So we do have a premium database offering sitting on top of that as well. If we look at the integration within Management Studio, let me go back to the demo and show you some of those capabilities there. Okay, so, I have SQL Management Studio. Okay, what I can do here is I can look at my database and I can go to tasks and I could say, deploy this database to Windows Azure SQL Database. Okay? This is a feature that sits in SQL Server 2014. And what we're doing there was we're actually making the deployment easier. Now I'm showing you that on a SQL 2012 instance, okay? Because this is actually more of a tools feature than it is one of the database engine features. Okay? So what I can do is I can say, hey, deploy this to Windows Azure SQL Database. So take this database, okay? And what I'm going to do is I'm going to specify my database connection. Now, of course, I'm going to specify the connection to that Windows Azure server that I have up and running. I'm going to hit connect, and I'm going to be able to deploy from right here. What I can specify here is what's going to be the size of my database. Now, what do you notice here? We would all experience DBA, so what do you notice here? Specify my edition, I can specify my size. What's missing? Yeah, there's some options missing there, right? I cannot specify on how my database needs to grow or whatsoever, but I cannot specify what my log file is, okay? Why? Because it's SQL database. So when you provision a database using a Windows Azure SQL database, the size you specify is the size of the database excluding the log file. Okay? So when I specify that, what's going to happen? It's going to connect to the server, and it's going to do the same validations as what I had initially. So it will validate, do you have any keywords in there that I shouldn't be using? Do you have any features that are not supported on Windows Azure SQL Database? Okay. So what will happen in this case is before I deploy, I'm going to look at security here, look at the users. Well, I had this Contoso user here. Okay. That obviously seems to be a problem deploying that. So what I can do is I can grab this and delete this one. There was no dependency on it. It was an orphaned object. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go back here and say, okay, deploy this database. Okay. It says that my source database is 93 megs. I'm deploying that. Okay. Right there, Contoso SalesDB. It's a web edition whatsoever. Okay. I can hit finish. It will start extracting the schema. Okay. And if there's any error along the line on something that is not supported, I will get an error message just like what I have here. So what I will get here, it says, hey, I get a warning. Okay. The table, dim date, dim product, dim product category, dim product subcategory, dim customer, they don't have clustered indexes. Actually, what we do with SQL database is we force people to do the right thing. Okay? So we implement rules for optimization of that SQL database platform that would actually allow you to do that. So what will be my fix here is I can go back to that database, go to the tables, create primary keys on each of those. Okay? And I think I already have that on this one. If I go to my Contoso sales here, dim customer, if I look on the columns, do I have any primary keys there? Nope, I don't. So I should have to create those and then I can do my actual deployment. Okay. Contoso Sales Cloud here has my tables in there, has my primary keys in there. So if I take that Contoso Sales Cloud, which I prepared, what I can now do is I can go the same thing, task, okay, deploy my database to Windows Azure, specify my connection, okay, specify the size of the database, let's call that Contoso Demo, okay, hit next, same demo. Same thing will then happen, and it will just validate again and see if I can actually get that deployed. Okay? So see, schema validation is successful, export of the database, it's processing the tables, it's now going to create a database on a Windows Azure SQL database. So once that's done, it has a deployment plan, it's going to initialize, move that database over to the cloud. That's how simple it is. Question. Yeah, if the size exceeds, so at the first, so the question is, what happens if the size exceeds? Okay, so initially I specified I want to put that into a 1 gig database. Okay, it told me that my initial database size is 92 megs, so not a problem. What happens if the size exceeds on my Windows Azure database after a while, after I start loading data in it? Same thing as what happens with SQL Server. You're going to get an error message that say that your data file needs to grow. So how are you going to fix that? You go to the management portal, and you're going to change the size of that database. Okay, which means you're going to pay more for that shared database capacity. Question?
Like things that are matching up, like do you actually have a log file in a SQL database?
Yes. So the question is, do I actually have a log file? Yes, you do. The thing is, you don't have any control over it. Okay?
Because it's matching up with you can't do point-in-time recovery.
Yeah, that is a correct and a fair assessment. Okay? SQL database is a service offering running on Windows Azure. It's not fully 100% SQL Server. Okay? For a lot of the projects, a lot of the applications that are web-centric and so on, that's going to be a great solution for you. Okay? If I want to have full control, though, and thanks for the lead-in into the next thing that I wanted to show you. If I want to have full control, though, with the SQL Server 2014 tools, what we can actually do is the following. I can say, I want to take this database and deploy that database to a Windows Azure virtual machine. Okay? So I'm going to deploy and say, this database that I have sitting on premises, now I want to take that and move that over into a virtual machine. Now, one of the things you need to keep in mind here is that my original source database will still stay on that system. I don't have to delete it or whatever. I mean, I would have to delete it if I move my application over, okay? So what I'm gonna specify here is, what is my source connection? Well, my source connection is the SQL 2012 database that I'm gonna connect to. And a database I am going to take is Contoso Sales Cloud. It is asking me for a temporary file location for backup files. So initially I showed you that backup to cloud, where I could take a database, backup to URL, okay? What we're doing here is the following. In this step, in this wizard, I mean, I could do this all manually. I could go to Windows Azure, create a virtual machine, enable storage on that, enable my IP networking on that. Once that I'm done with the IP networking and the virtual machine is provisioned, I can then go to my database on premises, take a backup, copy that over using a tool, put that on the Azure storage, restore the backup, and I did the same thing. We're making it much easier with the SQL 2014 tools here by giving you a wizard to actually do that. So what I'm gonna do here is I'm gonna hit next, okay? It's gonna ask me for my publishing profile on Windows Azure. So what I can actually do is I can log into Windows Azure and get my publishing profile. So I've done that prior. And so what I'm gonna do next is hit hit next here. It will validate my subscription details and it will ask me for what's going to be your virtual machine name, okay? I can actually, it will validate my subscriptions and look on what are the virtual machines that you already have in place that you want to deploy this to, okay? So what I do there is I can say, hey, I want to have a CloudOS service name, Australia Tag at 1, my virtual machine name, I can specify storage, or I could go to settings here. And actually, if I go to settings, I'll be able to define new storage. So what I can do with this, and these are preview bits, so that's why you see that the layout might not be as nice yet. So what I can do now is I can say, I want to deploy this database to SQL Server 2012 SP1 standard on Windows Server 2012, and I'm gonna do the same thing. Cloud admin, what was my password again? I know what it is, I just can't type it. There we go. I can specify the size of the virtual machine. Okay, so extra small is 1 core, small, medium, large, extra large, or out of category. A7 was what, 56 gigs? Okay, let's do a small one. Specify the location, okay. It will generate a certificate, and if I move this down here and hit okay, what will happen at that point is I can get my actions listed. So build a new virtual machine, use an image for that, which is one of my platform images, okay? And then hit finish and hit next, okay? So if I then switch over to my Windows Azure portal, what I actually will be able to see here, if I go into the all items, what I go into the virtual machines, I will actually see that that virtual machine will come up and will be provisioned. Okay, there we go, see? Now, what's really nice about that is this is really a fast way to take a database from on-premises to the cloud, right? So what have we done so far? We looked at, hey, I'm a DBA and I see all these offerings. As I asked before, how many of you are actually already using any of these? I'm not even gonna mention that for the recording purposes, okay? So, think about that, okay? your world is changing, and I guess some of you have been looking at what are the new technologies, the new features, the new capabilities. I see a strong opportunity in getting into those capacities and seeing a lot of startups leveraging those capacities as well. That was the name of the session title, okay? How does your future as a DBA look like? Now, what we didn't cover is the non-relational part, right? Okay? What I can do is, this is, let's say, for example, is I'm going to be running HD Insight, okay, which is a Hadoop cluster. And so what I have here is I have a Hadoop cluster, HD Insight servers up and running here. It has 24 cores. It's got storage assigned to it, okay? And so what I can do is I can connect to that cluster. But what else is, if I look at that storage account here, that HD Insight server is using, I have things sitting on there that I collected. Okay, so I have things like, hey, there's a URL here. That URL, HD Insight server, seems to be holding some Twitter data feeds that I pulled in. Okay, that rolled up straight to HD Insight. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna look at the actual storage account here. As if I go into that storage on that HD Insight server, as I select that here, go back one step there. Okay, HD Insight server, I can manage that key, copy that key, okay? Because that's what people will do, right? Now I'm not only becoming the DBA that needs to manage the SQL stuff, they probably want me to think about, hey, what are you doing with that non-relational stuff? Because people have seen those Power BI capabilities where they can now start combining and leveraging data together, okay? So all of a sudden you have people within your organization that are going to be using Power Query, and they're gonna go and combine data, right? They're gonna go to, I want data from other sources. Could be that I wanna pull in some data from Windows Azure Marketplace, okay? So it's gonna ask me to sign in there. I'm gonna skip that on this point. Could be that people want to import data from Facebook. Actually, I've been running an experiment on my own Facebook page recently. I put things on where people purposely are going to respond. So by the end of the year, I can do a really nice demo on what upsets people or what they typically reply to, okay? It's really funny at times on what you see there. Okay? Or I can do my own Facebook report stats and analysis. Now, think about a company that has their own Facebook page and they put new product releases out and they want to gauge the sentiments that people are doing with their products, and then they want to combine that with their actual sales. This is where Power Query comes in and allows you to really combine those technologies, right? So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to say like, hey, I want to get data from Windows Azure HD Insight, so I'm going to get that from HD Insight server, okay? And it's going to ask me for that account key, which is my storage key that I thought I copied, okay? It's going to connect to that, and I can now start browsing that HD Insight. I can look at that Twitter data, and I'm going to see that this is a binary document. Okay, so let's look at the content that we have in there, okay? And these are Twitter feeds that people created on some of the sentiment on Microsoft products, okay? Now, what am I gonna do with this? This is not really structured, right? What I can do now is I can actually grab this and say, hey, I want to transform this into a JSON document, okay? And use Power Query. I can then expand each of those records and say what I'm interested in, okay? For quality purposes, I'm not gonna go to the actual text on that tweet. I don't know what's in there, so I do wanna make sure I stay safe. But I wanna see created at. I can look at the geo or the coordinates that might be assigned with that. I can actually look at the retweet status, the retweet count, the favorite count, so on. okay? So I can grab all of these and then bring that in. On the user, I can actually expand and say, hey, I'm interested in the screen name, the location, probably the number of followers as well, right? If you want to measure some impact or do some damage control. So I can grab this. And I can say here, like, hey, hold on a second. I'm not really interested in that geo column, so let's remove that. Let's take that away. Take the other things away there too. So the columns that I don't need, actually it might be easier to just say which ones I want to keep. Okay. So what I can do is right click and say remove all the other columns. Okay. So now I'm combining that data, I'm pulling that in, okay. I got all that sentiment, okay. And that's where I probably am going to be playing an important role as a DBA as well, right? Because if you looked at some of the sessions that you probably looked at Power Query, the Power BI capabilities, what they're going to do next is they're going to publish this query into my organization. And that query that I publish within my organization might again be leveraging data that sits within a SQL Server database, for which I'm the DBA, okay? So how does our future really look like? Okay, there's going to be a lot of cloud and a lot of capabilities. There's going to be a lot of tools that people will start leveraging as part of a BI experiences, combining data sets. So we have to be aware of that. We have to understand how people now and in the short future will be start using new tool sets for BI capabilities, for analysis purposes, because eventually they will start be hitting our databases. Okay, or combine those databases. Questions? Go ahead.
Our clients want their data sitting in Australia. So is there an Australian data set in plan or next year?
Yes. Is Mike in the room? No? Okay. So there are, I think, two Australian data centers planned. I don't know what the actual release status is. But if you looked at one of the first slides that I put up with the geolocations, there were actually already one that was pointed out on the map there. Now, speaking about Australian data, right? I mean, there is just a huge amount of resources available that you can easily find online. So one of the things that I've done is, I mean, let's say I could combine this with sales information, and I can then map that out to publicly accessible information. The postal code table, for example, you can download that CSV file fairly easily. It's publicly accessible. And then you could really start plotting that out and overlay that with your own data, then publish your result sets. I had a demo that talked about shark population and shark attacks, but I figured that with probably some lunches coming up, you don't want to go into those details. But you can really combine and overlay those multiple data sets together, which is, I think, really nice to do and really creates a lot of capabilities in terms of getting things done, right? Like the key things that we do in some of our demos and showcases is we actually do an online search. Okay, and that online search will allow me to pull in any kind of information that I could just put in there. Let's say I want to look at rugby scores. I don't know what the quality of that data is going to look like. But what it will do, it will get me some data sets that I can start pulling in. Okay, look at that. Wow, that would be a nice data sample. Okay, pre-World War I results, history of rugby union matches between Australia and New Zealand. Okay, so what I can do is I can pull that in, start manipulating that data, take the venues, split that out, and then map that out with the postal code table, look on the capacity of those venues. I mean, there's some really cool ideas that you can really start playing with this. Okay. I'm going to go back to our presentation and So we talked about database portability. I can grab my database, deploy that. I talked about the Visual Studio support. Of course, we can do all of this using PowerShell as well. Okay. We talked about the SQL database offerings, which is a database size that is going up to 150 gigs. The premium database size is going up too. So the premium offering is available. And I showed you on how we could provision, leverage that Windows Azure SQL database. I know that many of you were MSDN subscribers. You really should start checking that out, because I think as an MSDN subscriber, the offering is they give you like $150 a month of compute power. You could basically run multiple and multiple websites on that and SQL databases without getting charged. So why would I go to any kind of hosting if I have that part of my own MSDN benefit? Okay. Conclusion. Okay. Don't be scared. You still will be managing your farm. Okay. You're just going to do it differently with different tools. They're very similar, but they're more advanced. Okay. If you want to know on how to maintain landscapes like that, someone suggested me to talk to Grant that's sitting here up front. But yeah, tools have changed. I think, how many of you had never seen the SQL Server data tools before? Okay. Good, some people did. Okay. With that, make sure you complete the evaluation at the end of the session. We truly appreciate the feedback. Personally, this is my last session. I want to say thank you for just giving me the opportunity to speak here. It's the second time that I've been to Gold Coast. I've seen a lot. It's an amazing view you get from the Sky Bridge from the hotel to here. But I mean, it definitely is a pleasure coming out, getting into customer conversations and so. So really thank you for the opportunity having me out here. Thanks for the support and the great turnout in terms of showing up for the sessions. So thanks, everyone.